the mound. Urban's got it. Nobody's covered second base.
I saw this right. Did Jeff Francoeur get this and throw it straight in the ground? Got a little stumble here. And that's the shortest throw you'll ever see. He just missed the cutoff, man.
Look at the phone. It's off the hook. Look at that slow. He's going to use the towel. This is a bad night.
Pitcher is warming it up.
When the uniforms turned powder blue, the edge dropped off, and the sweet smell of success turned sour.
The Fanatic, his hot dog shooting gun, that's 98 miles an hour of compressed meat headed right at your noggin.
Welcome to the Dirty Inning.
Hello. It's preseason. I'm just there.
It's the podcast that feels like waking up in a dumpster full of Phillies memories.
It is that. That's exactly what it is. Yeah, no, you're right.
We took a week long, I guess you would call it a hiatus there, as our own John Stolness stepped away from the podcasting mic.
Hiatus.
I had to handle the hitting season hosting duties, and gosh, the pressure immediately got to me, but I've spent many evenings with my hands clenched tightly around the railing of a bridge.
Oh no. That's terrible.
No, it was fine. Welcome
Did
back.
Did you die?
Well, I'll leave that up for the listeners. Welcome back to the podcast where we talk about the funniest, most obscure, dumbest Phillies innings in history. And, you know, what a time to be talking about the Phillies, Trev. They're back in action. And, you know, like the Looney Tunes. And
like the current Looney Tunes, they suck.
I can't believe, frankly, that I didn't hear more from people on day one of Phillies training. Well, not day one of training camp, but day one of the Phillies playing baseball games at training camp. I believe they walked in like three runs, didn't they?
Didn't they pitch, was it 60 or 80 pitches and they only got two outs?
Yeah,
very good stuff.
There's this great rule in the preseason this year where if the manager, you know, if the inning reaches a certain point, I think it's a pitch limit, and the manager does not like what he's looking at, he has, and this isn't exactly how it goes, but he has a button, so to speak, that he can press that says end this madness on it.
And, I hate this. I hate this so much. End it now.
Yeah. And then that just happens. And in the first inning of the first game the Phillies played in the preseason, and again, I can't believe I did not hear more about this. But the game led off with an Adam Haseley home run for the Phillies, yay! But then in the bottom of the inning, Ivan Nova had started for the Phillies, and he allowed an immediate leadoff home run, maybe on the first pitch. And that just spoke to the quality of the inning to follow.
It turns out Ivan Nova does not have anything left in the tank. We can
experiment over. I think we're good. I'm good.
It's always great when a spring training experiment ends very quickly. I feel like there's progress there.
People are like, oh, it's a lottery ticket. But, you know, once they announce the numbers, you know pretty quick whether or not your lottery ticket is paying off.
You ever do a scratch off? Those, you don't keep the ones that don't pay off.
Now, the memories we made scratching this residue with a quarter in front of your smiling grandmother, who has, I'm assuming, just given it to you for a holiday or
yeah, birthday. Grandmothers do that. That's true.
Right. So, yeah, this inning, Trev, we do have to briefly touch on this. I know we
nightmare inning. Yeah, I can't believe more people didn't at us, actually.
We don't. Well, since I still don't have access to the Dirty Inning Twitter account, there's a chance we're just getting flagged down nonstop, and I'm just unaware of
people
it.
Are just there's all these like screeds out there about how we're too elitist to follow back.
They don't interact with their listeners, and there's four of us. Ivan Nova gave up a home run to Willy Castro, and it was great because they were playing the Tigers, and not just like the Tigers, the 2021 Tigers, and not just the 2021 Tigers, but a lot of people who probably won't even play on the 2021 Tigers because they're not good enough. And
Justin, let be clear, not good enough yet.
I mean, they looked good enough playing the Phillies in training camp.
Yeah, that's like if you look at the, I don't know how many of our listeners are really like prospect heads, but if you look at the minor leagues, the way it works is there's like a number of stops you have to get to, right? And one of the stops is beating the Phillies, and the next stop is single A.
Yeah, it's like when they would play a college team in spring training. Like, all right, we got that. And then like one of those years,
we beat the Miami Hurricanes.
One of those. No, it's always Florida State. It's
You're right.
And they would always. I think in like 2015 or 2016, one of those bad years. Finally, the Phillies lost that game.
Oh, I remember that. That was so funny.
They just ran. The headlines just ran with it. It was great.
I love the people trying to say, like, it doesn't matter that they lost to a college team. Like, every moral victory is a loss with the Phillies.
Like, look, I can sit here and agree that, yeah, it doesn't actually mean anything. But also, I can sit here and think they lost to a college baseball team. I know the loss doesn't even really exist, but also they lost.
It's a good thing they won't be playing anyone better than the 19-year-olds who make up the lowest possible level of the minors for the Tigers this year.
Oh, yeah. And speaking of which, after that leadoff home run Nova allowed, they scored 6 runs in their first training camp game. The Tigers scored 6 runs against the Phillies in the first inning. I mean, it was made for us. Like, this, we were supposed to experience that. And you know what I said to John and Liz was that, like, I'm glad it happened that way. Fans were booing. A man who refused to put on a mask but was also furious with the team was apparently escorted out of the stadium. I think he might have been shirtless. You know, everybody needed that. They needed that to happen so they could, you know, you can't show up to this game. Like, I would imagine that your excitement for being at a live baseball game, I'm not sure I would go to a live baseball game right now, but people were allowed to. And I'm sure the excitement and the familiarity and the feeling that, like, oh, things are going back to normal, it was outweighed any kind of lingering rage you had about this team and what it did in the previous season. And there was, you know, the rage you felt in 2020 at this team, specifically the pitching staff, reached historic levels because the badness of the pitching staff had reached historic levels. But
correct.
Yeah, even so, I would imagine your enthusiasm for being at a live baseball game, awesome, like that's going to outweigh any frustration. That's why I'm glad that this happened in the first inning, because it allowed all that frustration that was just like, you know what, I can like chill out, just came bubbling right back to the surface.
Oh, and everybody, yeah, well, we got into mid-season form. Yeah. Like, everyone was making fun of the Phillies, most loudly their fans, and we were all exactly where we needed to be in this part of the season, which is like strongly hating the team that we purportedly enjoy.
And then, you know, they lost 10-2, but again, it doesn't matter. It's not important. It'll matter in like a couple of, maybe like 2 weeks. Like at this point in Phillies training camp, they are 0-1-1. Trev, my question for you is, will they win a game in the Grapefruit League this year?
Really good question. My answer is yes, but it is a yes by way of they will have one improbable victory, and we will say that they've turned the corner or something, and then they will go on to lose their first 12.
So you're saying the Phillies are going to go 1-27 or however many, and 1-27 and 1,
and then like, but it'll be like a Bryce Harper home run like in the Cubs game,
right?
And and everyone's gonna be like, well, they needed to get that out of their system, and they did, so now they're good. Tell me you can't see that happening.
Oh, I can see that happening. I mean, I think I've been pretty on record lately about being positive on this team, being high on this team, and thinking,
oh yeah,
this could be a good team.
Before spring training, I was too.
But you know, it's I think you've just reached a point where it's so much easier to imagine them being the other thing than the thing you want them to be, because the examples of them being the other thing are so plentiful.
Oh, plentiful was the word I was going to use too. Now, is there any truth to the rumor that John left the podcast because of this inning?
You know, I've been instructed not to talk about that, but it was, I can say that it was a combination of things. One of them being Philly's stupidity. Another being just the call of the wild. You know, he had to get out there. He had to go, you know, set up a hammock. In the hedge three houses down from his own house. And just, you know, just live there, you know, for a while. Just really embrace the outdoors, the fresh air.
Family came with him, right? They're all in the hammock.
Yeah, John just, he packed up his family, packed up all their hammocks, and they all just camped out in some nearby shrubs for weeks, weeks and weeks. And that was his fun little off-season adventure. But the Phillies are back. And you know what?
We couldn't, sorry, John.
We couldn't be more pleased and
couldn't
excited.
We?
I mean, now that we've gotten the bad stuff out of the way, what are you excited about having gotten a good look at these R Phils this year?
All right, I'll try. Okay, one thing I'm excited about is that the team that I really thought was fun is back, which is to say, like,
you mean the Mets?
I get to watch JT. I get to watch Jacob. I get to watch I get to watch Bryce. I get, you know, like even like Didi and Gene Segura, and like, you know, there are fun people coming back, and I think that's cool. Like, I had resigned myself to the team being like extremely boring. Because they wouldn't get them, and they'd sign, you know, like they would sign Matt Joyce not as a fun spring training project, but as like, oh, it's our bench bat, like Michael Saunders was, but he's going to get as many at bats as Michael Saunders did, like that kind of team. And it's not going to be that. It'll be like, you know, for better or worse, it's the Stars again, and so like that'll be fun.
Well, I you keep mentioning Matt Joyce, I think he's going to be my spring fling this year. You know, it's like Susan Sarandon's character in Bull Durham, but okay. A far away and entirely sexless relationship I form with one.
Just like
player.
In Bull Durham, right?
Well, that's what I mean.
I've like only made it halfway through Bull Durham.
Ah, yes. I can see the key reference you're now missing. But yeah, with zero intimacy whatsoever, I, a stranger, form an attachment at that level to a random player in the Phillies training camp while they never know that I am alive. And that's become a fun little tradition for me.
That's kind of beautiful. And
yeah, it is. And yeah, and this year, I'm pretty sure I've latched on to Matt Joyce in a really serious way. Maybe it was that diving catch. Maybe it was that monster home run. Maybe it's the fact that you can do a lot with his name. And frankly, as I get
Jack
older,
that's you, Moise.
It's kind of all I'm looking for in my ball players.
So what can you do with his name?
You got Rejoice. You got Joyce to the World. You get, what did I say yesterday? I did Rejoice. And I think the Phillies Instagram account was already working that pretty hard. I mean, you know, they
naturally, yeah, they
have some first idea stuff there.
You have to, literally, if you don't do that, they fire you. You're not allowed to.
And in a lot of cases, they did fire those social media people.
Oh, boy.
Major League Baseball
okay,
teams.
Well, but that's not as funny as I thought it was.
Yeah,
I
way
guess.
To bring that up again. God.
Wow. Okay. Whew. Okay. Whoa. 3, 2.
No, you don't do the counts. I do the counts. 3. 1. Damn it! You screwed me up. Hey, speaking of screw ups, the bulk. Would you say the bulk is your favorite play in baseball, Trev?
Absolutely, 100%. Before you asked me that question, it was the triple play, but now
I knew
it's
it.
The bulk.
I was a walk off grand slam man myself, but then I watched a pitcher scratch his nose and accidentally drop a baseball during a meaningless August game, and a runner advanced to second who had not been there before. And
I was changed forever.
What can I say? I'll never go back.
It's great. It's very good.
The balk is stupid. The balk is kind of a miscarriage of baseball. It's kind of a crime against the flow of the game. All of that summertime poetry and motion is disrupted by an awkward stumble or a dropped ball and a honk of disapproval from a hand flailing umpire.
Hand flailing duck umpire.
No, no, this is all wrong. Shut up! Imagine an angry pitcher kicking a duck dressed like an umpire over the outfield fence for calling a ball. I'm sorry. All right.
It's really good. This is exactly what the show is about. Come on.
It's got a little mask on. All right. This is why they gave the balk such a hideous name. A walk sounds pleasant. You know, you're sent on a gentle sojourn to the nearest bag. That sounds like a pleasant experience. A balk sounds like something you cough up or have cut out of
balk.
You by a doctor. Oh, I got a stage 3 balk behind my eyeball. It's brutal. Yeah, I can tell.
That's horrible. Please stop saying it.
Your eye is pulsating. You gotta get debulked. It's an ugly play in baseball.
Do you think pitchers know what a balk is?
Well,
do you think they have a general idea?
That's the thing we got to talk about here, because in looking into a balk, looking into the definition of a balk, how baseball defines it, how umpires define it, how it's the amount of balks in a season has fluctuated greatly from year to year. You kind of realize that this is one of those things that, yes, there is a written down definition of it, but I feel like there's probably a massively subjective component to the definition of a balk. I read at one point there's 13 ways to commit a balk, and then I read there's 31 ways to commit a balk. So it's
and somehow you didn't actually write the 15 ways to leave your lover parody of this.
Right.
Which is, I'm a little disappointed in you.
Right, so just to address the elephant in the room, yes, this episode will be a spinoff of our previous episode, actually. If any of our more eagle-eared, that's the phrase, eagles definitely
yeah,
have ears.
There's the one.
any of our eagle-eared listeners.
If you have holes in the side of your head, you are our eagle-eared listeners.
Just an eagle with human ears flying down, attacking a duck dressed like an umpire. Oh, no. That'll show you. Calling box on me. Anyway, eagle-eared listeners will realize that very soon as we start talking about today's story, which is about the 1984 Phillies and the sheer volume of balks that this team committed for no reason, that this was actually brought up in our previous episode, the subject matter of which was, Trev, go ahead.
That was last episode, right?
Yep, that's what I just said.
Yeah, we talked about the Phillies of yore. I don't remember.
All the stalling and sputtering. I'm getting convinced with every gasp, every moment of silence that you do remember what exactly our last episode entailed. And you know, it doesn't actually matter what we talked about last time. It doesn't matter who remembers it, you know, whether I don't and just threw to Trev because
uh-oh,
I assumed, you know, he would know too. The point is that during that episode, we mentioned this 1984 team, and I was just so intrigued at the notion of a Phillies team that just balked and balked and balked nonstop to the point that Richie Ashburn was driven to write about them, that I decided they had earned an episode all to themselves, and they're going to have to share it with an eagle with human ears and a duck dressed like an empire. That's just how these things go sometimes, but that is going to be the subject matter of today's episode of The Dirty Inning. And I did not write the parody song that Trev and I discussed in the last episode. Instead, I just looked at each moment, each balk of the 1984 Phillies season in which they committed 27 balks, which was the highest in baseball by a significant margin, but by no means not like a vastly different number from the league lead in balks on a typical season. It's
I was gonna say, was it like a balk heavy, like a balk renaissance, a year that was just like balk, balk, balk?
It was not. That won't come until 1988, which we will also discuss.
Yes.
But in 1984, it felt like it was just kind of the Phillies' turn to be the team that balked a lot. Now, that being said, this wasn't a team that wasn't used to balking a lot. They were typically in like the top five of teams balking around this time, like in the years surrounding 1984. They were a balk happy team. But you also just got to take into consideration how much umpires were calling balks, what they thought a balk was, and all the fun little subjective details and human elements that go into all the things that infuriate and charm us about baseball. So we'll get it.
Now we have to be charmed too, right?
It has to be both at all times, or one of them takes over and you go insane. If you're too charmed by baseball, you look like an idiot. If you're too angry at baseball, you look unhinged. And you got to keep that balance. And typically, I think we're pretty good at that.
We seem really, really smart and hinged.
Really on the level. What with all this bird talk to start.
All these eagles that have ears and horrible mice.
We're gonna get into the 1984 Phillies, how much they balked, what each balk entailed, and just what was going on with balks in baseball at this time, right after this break. Welcome back. We are going to avoid any humiliating microphone gaffes moving forward.
None of those coming up. Not on this product.
It's a professional podcast. We simply don't have audio issues. End of story. I won't talk about it.
These rumors are unfounded and cruel.
But here we are back in 1984 with the Phillies, talking as we are about how much they balk. Early in the season, obviously, they didn't know they would be balking as much as they wound up. But
I love imagining them planning for it.
You guys don't think we're going to balk too much this year, do you?
I hope we do.
I want to, just to see the look on my dad's face. What kind of team is this? What is this?
I don't like this team at all. I need a new team.
What's that smell? What's the smog settling over South Philadelphia? It's a little dirty inning reference for you.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
All right. So anyway, 1984. Phillies balk a lot. But let's stay here in the present for a second, where a researcher named David Venturi put together a piece called Balks, an Illustrative and Quantitative History, in May 2016. That's right. He was basically the Beatles of balk writer abouters. And the thing is, it's a well-written, it's a brisk piece that doesn't take up too
brisk,
much of your time. And you know, I used it here because of how helpful it was, and he did a great job. But you know what? There's absolutely no reaction you can have to the description I just said other than what exactly you just did. That's just
so boring.
You wrote something that had the word quantitative in the title. I hate it.
this piece is called The Quantitative Version of Balking by T. Edmund Zifferus the Seventh.
Dude, this is a,
that's what I think his name is, by the way.
Did you guys read my fun article about balks? Oh no, I didn't read it. Is it there's a lot of fun information and like interesting stories about balks and everything?
Oh yeah, no, definitely tons.
No, it's mostly spreadsheets, and I used italics once. So there we are.
It's just imagining, like, only in baseball would you get like a fan who's like, hell yeah, I can finally write the article I've wanted to write about baseball this whole time. And the choice they make is, I'm going to write a quantitative analysis of balks. Like, that's such a baseball thing to do. It drives me nuts.
I love us up here on our high horse, as if we have any room to talk. Two hosts years spanning podcast talking about obscure and just dumbass moments in the history of
at least
baseball.
We didn't call it like an analysis of variance in Philly seasons.
That's true. That's fair. Yeah, your job is to come up with the baseball analytics writer version of the name of this podcast before we reach the end of it. Don't say it now.
I won't. I promise.
I'll ask again before the end of the episode, if we ever reach the end of the episode.
We won't.
So David Venturi writes his piece, May 2016. It's called Balks, an Illustrative and Quantitative History.
Boo.
He wrote that in the history of this particular statistic, balking. I never feel like I'm saying it right. It's just a hideous word. Balking. He wrote that in the history of this particular statistic, there are four seasons to really focus on in baseball. There was.
Sorry, it sounds like he's talking about like seasons of life, like a time to live.
In the winter of balking, we of course have no. In the well, you would say in the context of this, the springtime of balking was 1898 when the first balk rules were instated. Then it wasn't until 1950 that you hit the summertime of balking, when the rules were altered a bit to include a required 1 second pause by the pitcher before delivering.
Okay.
And in that 1 second, you were required to think about your entire life, the existence of man, just all of it together in 1 second. Just think about your whole life and then throw the pitch.
I think that makes sense. I mean, you got to know that if baseball's good at anything, it's not. It's over exaggerating the gravity of every single one of its moments.
Oh, that is true. Yes, that's fair. Yeah. Okay. So there we go. In 1950, so the rule changes, and then 13 years later, 1963, umpires were actually directed to call more balks. So, you know, just to really put some sex back in the game.
The people are calling for more balks, sir. All right. I don't know any old commissioners. I'm sorry. So I'm going to say Kennesaw Mountain Landis, decree it to be so. We shall have balks galore.
The fans want balks. We'll give them balks.
Oh, we don't want balks.
What?
Well, it's too late. The season started, and obviously you can't give an umpire a ruling and then change that ruling. It confuses and enrages them. So we got to just move forward. And they did. They called many balks. They called 20 balks in the first 20 games of the season.
Goodness, that's a lot of balks.
It's just like... It's like the baseball. It's like sucking all the weight out of a baseball. And then there were like so many home runs that people were like, all right, I'm testing these baseballs. And Major League Baseball was like, whoa, apparently there was some kind of accident down at the factory. who would have known? Like, there's no such thing as a light-handed conspiracy in baseball. It's always just the stupidest, most heavy-handed moves. It's impossible not to detect exactly what they're going. This is why there's no baseball conspiracies, because everybody knows exactly when some shady stuff is going on because they're so bad at it.
I really love the idea of someone saying, okay, that's it. I'm checking these balls. Like, okay.
And in this case, in 1963, they're like, we need to call more balks, but like, be slick about it. And 20 games into the season, they reconvene. And he's like, okay, so like, what the hell are you guys doing?
You're completely blowing up my spot, re-balks.
Which part about being slick about it did you not understand?
Sorry, Chief.
Oh, jeez. Well, if you thought those guys were heavy-handed with the balks, you should check out 1988. The season known as...
I love checking out 1988.
The season known as Balkamania.
The far less exciting Hulkamania spinoff.
I was setting you... I left that in there in hopes that it would set you up to make...
Oh, yeah, brother.
But that's... Yeah, according to the Dixon Baseball Dictionary... That was the series of time known as Balkamania, or Year of the Balk, when the definition of a balk changed ever so slightly from complete stop with single, complete, and discernible stop with both feet on the ground.
What you gonna do when the umpire goes wild on you and calls you a balk? Oh, yeah, brother. I'll see you in San Diego this Friday, and I'm gonna tell you, you're gonna let one guy on base, but you're not gonna walk him or get him hit off him. Oh, yeah, brother. Tune in.
Love that there was only enough time left in the ad for the
Yeah,
ads.
No, it was, he got too
in.
Into it. Tune in. Quick.
Yeah, so that got pretty insane. I don't know if you heard the barely legible new definition of a balk that I included there, but this is why this has typically led to utter chaos. No one seems to know objectively what a balk was or is, when to call it. And this seems to have brought about the current era in which a balk, when called, is instinctively contested by the culprit, because calling a balk just feels entirely subjective at this point. Is there any other call in baseball that, like, obviously guys fight a close play or a close pitch or whatever, but, like, is there any particularly named play that when it happens in baseball is instinctively fought tooth and nail by those involved?
Close play at home.
Sure, but, like, even in that case...
That's a little.
There's, like, guys will get up and walk away because they're, like, if they know they're out or whatever, or... Well, see,
yeah, there are others. The balk sort of lives in the same world as the close pitch. Like, the pitch that's close to a strike, but, like... No, not the close pitch. Excuse me. That's too obvious. Check swing.
Oh, I see. Yes. No, and in that vein, but again, there, I think it falls to the umpire, because I've suspected for a long time, talk about conspiracies, that no umpire has ever known what an actual check swing, when they are appealed to.
100%.
No umpire has never been able to accurately answer that question.
There has never, ever been an umpire who's been like, oh, yeah, no, I call this check swing because it's clearly, by my book, a check swing, and here's what my book is, and like it crosses the plane. What's the plane? I don't know.
They can't hesitate for half of 1 second when they make that call, because you know if it's a full second, he was not watching. He was thinking about his grandkids. He was looking at a bird. He was looking at a candy wrapper blowing across the infield. You know, and I totally
I better make
get
this
it.
Good. Audience isn't going to be happy.
I mean, I think we've all found out in the past year that we can't even stay focused for an entire Zoom call without, like, looking at something unrelated to what the call's about.
Justin's getting contemporary.
Being an umpire who's standing at a base watching this at bat, thinking, like, okay, I'm not directly involved with this play. And then suddenly everyone's pointing at you, literally, and you're like, nuts. And you have to make a more accurate call than the guy who's standing, like, a foot away from where the swing happened. And here,
I love when they point at them. Like, I in my mind, people are like, they mention, like, Angel
Hernandez.
Yes, Hernandez. Sorry. For some reason in my head, I thought Herrera, and that's someone else. But, Angel Hernandez, like, literally when I picture him in my mind, I just see him at first base going, doing the no swing or the swing.
If I was an umpire, I would make a halfway between out and safe signal so much. That's probably why they're so different calls, so that you can't do that. Because, yeah, like, imagine if safe was just also making a fist, but with your index finger up. Like, how many times would you just come into it like rock, paper, scissors, but, like, you realize you're sticking out, like, your finger, like, a finger gun or something.
Just, like, looking at everyone in the crowd and seeing how mad or upset or excited they are. And like, okay, what am I going to do here?
I swear I just read something in what must have been research for one of these episodes where an umpire literally changed his call because the crowd was like, no. Or, like, he went to the crowd and was like, what was the call? I missed it. Like, what was the call? And they told him, and he was like, okay. And, like,
that would truly, like, that is at once really, really, like, super fun and also the worst possible way to do a baseball game. Like,
oh, yeah. Just a terrible decision. A terrible judgment of you. What do you think they're going to say?
But it's very fun.
I love the idea that he was like, no, my bad. And, like, maybe he was even like, I'm letting you have this call because obviously you're going to call it in favor of the home team. So, like, I'm just giving you guys this out of favor of my ignorance. I'm awarding this umpire, who may or may not even be real,
tons
a ton of
credit. Yeah, honestly, this guy is getting off the hook pretty clear, because basically he just set up the baseball voice. It's like, call in on this number to determine if he was out at home.
Out, safe, give us a call. Phone lines are open.
Please, we're so lonely.
Well, getting back to balking and its place in baseball, according to the Baseball Companion by Angus G. Garber, before 1980, I knew you were going to laugh at that. I don't
What's
even know,
funny?
Why are you, what are you laughing at? Were you laughing
at Angus G. Garber?
Yeah, it's funny.
written by an off-brand Simpsons character. Yeah, like just like showed up one day to say like he's from Willie's town or something.
Okay, that's fair enough. But Garber wrote in his book, before 1988, the balk was one of those arcane baseball rules that had been on the books for years and rarely enforced. Balks, basically rules for a pitcher's mound etiquette, suddenly came to the forefront. Blame Whitey Herzog.
Always blame Whitey.
One manager said, because of the 1987 World Series, or about the 1987 World Series, he said, before he, Herzog, started bitching about the Twins pitchers in the 1987 World Series, you never heard the word balk, one major league manager said. Like, he's exaggerating to an extent, but like,
weren't they just
about balks.
Was Burt Blyleven on the 87 Twins?
Sure was, and it was his fault.
Blyleven has a really weird delivery. I could see that. I could see someone getting like real worked up about that. You're the opposing manager,
despite balks being something that apparently no one talked about, according to this one anonymous manager, somehow the Phillies pitching staff had heard it almost nonstop.
Do you think the anonymous manager was Larry Boa? I know he wasn't a manager at that point, but he probably could tell somebody who was gonna be a manager, right?
I just looked at him.
Okay. I
see where this is. You're small and angry. I can see where this is going.
Yeah, I mean, he seems to be the kind of person who would say something like, "Oh, this is all Whitey Herzog's fault that we have the balk."
Herzog's Cardinals had been stifled by the Twins in Game 2 of the 87 World Series, largely because Herzog said the Twins' Burt Blyleven was quick pitching and therefore balking all night, keeping the hitters off balance, stymieing the Cardinals' base running.
We balk all night to get some.
The accusation was brought up before Blylevin's next start in the series, which led to this all-time exchange in the papers, courtesy of the Los Angeles Times. This was an era in which, I mean, look, I think players today could trash talk more and should, but I think you're getting heavily scrutinized, and I think they'd almost rather just not make off the field comments.
Oh yeah, because it's just gonna end up with like them having to apologize or like do a press conference. It's a nightmare.
Right. I mean, yeah, we're in an age where Fernando Tatis Jr., the face of Major League Baseball, was like not only not defended but thrown under the bus by his own manager just because he stood like because he flipped his bat on an awesome home run.
Right.
So yeah. It's tough to imagine that today, but like in this particular case, you're reminded of the artful trash talking and just solid banter that these guys had in some old school baseball cases. So again, this is from the Los Angeles Times during the 1987 World Series. Tonight, in Game 5 of the series at Busch Stadium, Blyleven will face the Cardinals for a second time because of Herzog's squawking. The umpires may be watching Blylevin's motion more closely. Asked Wednesday if Herzog was merely playing mind games with the talk of quick pitching, Blyleven glibly answered, "Whitey doesn't really know me because I have no mind." But then Herzog's retort was, "Tell Bert I knew that."
That's really good.
That's very good. That's professionally written. That's excellent.
I really like that a lot. That's really good.
So I have, yes, as I said, I've seen it listed that there's anywhere from 13 to over 30 different ways to commit a balk. The official Major League Baseball definition is, or at least says, when a pitcher who is on the rubber makes any motion naturally associated with his pitching delivery and does not actually deliver the ball.
That makes sense in a way. Like you don't want them to be like doing a thing where they're tricking you, right? Like that would make baseball bad. You can see why there's the rule, right?
Right, and that can include any of the following items also listed by Philly or by Phillies baseball, by Major League Baseball.
So it's the Phillies who did it.
All of the other teams gave up balks years ago. The Phillies have continued to have them called on them because they continue to acknowledge them. No one understands why. Phillies are just tough to let things go. But yeah, in the case of a balk, it could be when a pitcher feigns a throw to first or third base, fails to complete the throw, fails to step directly toward a base before throwing to that base, takes a second step toward home plate with either foot, or otherwise resets their pivot foot. If this occurs with one or more runners on base, the umpire can call a balk. If the pitcher does not come to a complete stop between the time he enters the set position and when he delivers the ball, if the pitcher or the umpire determines that the pitcher has tried to quick pitch the batter in another way, doesn't keep the rest of his body other than his head still and two hands on the ball until he begins his delivery, if the pitcher drops the ball while touching the rubber, even if the drop is unintentional. You remember Johnny Cueto did that in the wild card game not too long ago.
I do.
I believe that was in Pittsburgh. Yeah. If a pitcher intentionally delays the game, if the pitcher throws to an unoccupied base, not in an attempt to put out a base runner, if the pitcher, when throwing, makes a motion naturally associated with his delivery while not touching the rubber and feigning a pitch on or near the pitching rubber without having the ball, when a pitcher has swung his free leg back past the pitching rubber while in the process of his leg kick, he must then deliver the ball to the plate or to second base in a pickoff attempt.
You lost me here.
Yeah, yeah. I've lost myself. And just to clear things up, here's Cole Hamels describing a balk that was called on him in 2014. First base umpire Chad Fairchild said that I hitched twice, that I came up, then I turned. But I think he was just looking at my back foot as opposed to the front leg because it was continuing towards second the whole time. When I spin, my cleat sometimes gets caught and causes a little jump. I'll keep doing it, and if they keep calling it, then I guess I'll have a problem. Did that clear that all up for you, Trey?
It just sounds like that Trump tweet about the people, the Coke Corporation. It's just like the umpire corporation is unhappy with me for my throwing motion. I'll still throw that garbage.
Drink sucks, but I'll keep drinking it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, I think you have a general idea. It's like if anything weird happens on the pitching mound, they call a balk. But you can see where the subjective nature of it comes from, because he's talking about like, oh, yeah, no, I know how my delivery looks. And it might look like I'm balking, but I'm not. But he looks at me and doesn't know that my cleat is catching on my pant leg. So he calls a balk, and you're just like, dude.
But this doesn't make any sense at all, man. Like, what are you talking about?
So in 1988, during Balkamania, the team with the most balks called in baseball was the Athletics with 76. This is an insane number of balks. And I mean, like, when I say the Phillies led the pack in 1984, they had 27. And that was relatively high compared
Wow, that's a lot of balks.
Compared to typical balk totals. But 76 in 1988. They tapered that down to a nice, sane 26 balks by the Giants the next year. That being
how did they
number.
Wait, so you said 87, right? The 87 Athletics?
No, and the 1988 Athletics.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah.
I want to see who's on that team. So let's see. I want to see who's some of the pitchers on that, because that is... Okay, so Eckersley's on there. He probably had a weird delivery.
Remember, yeah, I mean, it was definitely... I'm sure what the Athletics were doing fed into this, but also the umpires were just calling more balks. And I think if they saw anything they deemed, pitching.
This is a fun one, though. Rick Honeycutt was on this team. Bob Welch. Dave Stewart.
Yeah, they're gonna call some balks.
That's a balky team. That's a fun. I don't know Storm Davis. I feel like I should. But oh man. Hold on. Let me send you this. You can include this in the description if you want to. I'm gonna send you a link in chat. And look at Baseball Almanac's player card for Storm Davis and ask yourself why balks were called on him. Literally, I mean, the baseball card is him like reeling back as far as he possibly.
I mean, I think he's about to be called for a balk in his picture.
It's great
in this baseball card. Yeah. So a combination of things led to that insane 76 number. But like I said, the Giants across the bay from the A's the next year had 50 fewer balks and they were the league leader in balks that year. So
something in the San Franciscan and Oakland waters.
88 was just universally considered an anomaly for balks, I would say.
Is this like the 400 season? Will we ever see an 88 balk season again?
We better not, frankly. You would notice pretty quick, like a couple weeks into a 76 balk season, that it's going to just be balks 24/7. What's interesting is I didn't look into this, but I feel like there's I saw two examples of it. The Reds had 26 balks to lead the majors in 1990, and they won the World Series. And wow. I believe I also found that in 1980, the Phillies led the league in balks, and they obviously also won the World Series that year. So I wonder how many times a team that went on to win the World Series led the league in balks. I wonder how many times that happened.
That's a good question. I mean, I could look that up. That's very interesting, because of course, like, one of the benefits of doing a balk is that you do have a deceptive, I don't know how to say this in the right way. Like, you are doing something deceptive and like hard to pin down. And so like you're going to have some sort of success if you are consistently doing that. You can fool hitters. Let's see. Well, here's an interesting thing. Wow. This is okay. Can you guess who the NL leader for balks is by a country mile over the AL leader, Charlie Ho, who has 32.
In all of history?
In all of history.
In the National League, who has the most balls?
I'll give you a hint. You definitely know this player.
Steve Carlton.
That's correct.
Ha! You know why I was able to guess that?
Why?
Because he balked like five times on this 1984 team alone, and I'm pretty sure I had the most of this pitching staff.
Yeah,
I was able to guess that? Because we're literally doing a podcast on balks and the Phillies committing them right now.
He pitched, so over his career, he had 90 balks.
So not necessarily a death sentence as far as pitching goes.
No, yeah, that's super interesting. Well, most balks in a season, AL Dave Stewart in Oakland in 88, Dave Stewart's a good picture, and NL Steve Carlton in Philadelphia 11 in 1979, had a great season in 1979. So, kind of interesting.
That's interesting because you know that number is probably, like, how many did you say he had in 79?
Over, in 79 he had 11.
So that's 11 extra, I mean, for the most part, probably runners in scoring position, you know.
Mm-hmm,
that's
mm-hmm, yeah,
so like that would be pretty detrimental, I think, to, but you know, it was Steve Carlton, it was Dave Stewart, it was the world champion Reds, it was the world champion Phillies, you know. It's just interesting, because yeah, that's all a balk is to the pitcher, is like either it's a ball on the hitter, called on the hitter, but if the guy is on first, it's a runner in scoring position who wasn't before, and that's gonna be, I don't know, I feel like that would impact a pitcher's stats more negatively.
Yeah, I guess the question's going to end up being like, do you have enough of an edge when you're doing this, right? Like when you're doing the thing that is so like disruptive and strange, do you have enough of an edge that you are getting, you're getting deceptive results enough that like it makes up for the fact that, yeah, sometimes you're just gonna like, you're gonna let in a run. Like, are you leaving fewer runs out there because you are tricking people more often?
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting connection to draw that, I was surprised that it existed.
Me too.
Even in the base amount of research I was doing for this, that you can associate balks with a lot of really talented Hall of Fame level pitchers, which is really interesting.
Now, Steve Carlton, is he in the Hall of Fame?
Of course.
I'm just kidding. that was me doing a joke. I was doing a bit.
We're gonna get a lot of letters for this, and it will be letters, literally.
I did not listen to the rest of your podcast because my Victrola died, but
My nephew's forearm grew tired from cranking the Victrola, and I did not hear the remainder of your program, sirs.
But.
But I did buy the toasted wheat bran for which there was an advertisement at the midpoint. So anyway, while the Phillies finished 1984 with the most balks in baseball at 27, this isn't a number that's totally wild across space and time. But for it to be all to be on one team that didn't really indicate a lot of balks prior, it was noticeable around midseason. Yeah. That they were balking a lot, even though, as I said, they finished in the top rankings of balking teams around this time. We're going to take before we dive into the each and every balk of the 1984 Phillies season, we're going to take a break and be back right after this. Well, Trev, in 1984, there was a lot recognizable about the Phillies. For instance, they made a trade with the Cubs that everyone hated. Bob Dernier and Gary Matthews were sent to the Cubs, among other players. I think one other.
Curses.
Among one other player, a prospect. I think.
Not Sarge.
They sent the three of them to Chicago. The Phillies got a veteran reliever and a prospect back. And, this wasn't a move that was... You could tell the columnist, at least the one columnist I was reading, I think it was Frank Dolson in The Inquirer, he wanted to be mad at it, but he also had to admit that the Phillies had the depth at this point that they could make a trade like that, that they clearly lost the trade, mm-hmm. but also could afford to make it. So
they kind of like needed the one. It's sort of like the Hunter Pence trade in that way, where like
right.
the need kind of outstrips the calculus.
Right. They got this veteran reliever. I forget who it was. And they that was of great value to them. And, he was like, and throw in a prospect. Obviously not a high prospect, but they were like, let's throw in a prospect and you'll get these two major
and
league
it was Ryan
baseball
Sandberg.
Players. And it was Ryan. Yeah, people forget this. The Phillies actually traded I can't think of a single good baseball player's name.
Uh oh.
Phillies actually traded Ken Griffey Jr., an eight-year-old Ken Griffey Jr. at this time.
In fairness, it was not good of them to have the rights to eight-year-old Ken Griffey Jr. I think that's wrong.
This is what I really want to talk about, being familiar to people who follow the Phillies at this time. I swore I was going to find out how to pronounce this man's last name before we recorded. I never did that, and I don't know how I would have. But as far as Philly's marketing went in 1984, there was a change, Trev. And this is all we're going to talk about as far as like what was going on with the team and what was going on with the city at this point, because it's all we need to talk about.
Sure.
The Hot Pants Patrol. I don't know if are you familiar with this?
No.
Yeah, it was an in-game Philly's experience. I think it was... It was a pretty 70s idea, and as Joanne Levy, the Phillies assistant director of marketing at the time, said in the Daily News, I think the Hot Pants Patrol thing just wore out after a couple of years, and looking at it from the female point of view, a lot of women out there were turned off by that.
Yeah, I could see why.
Yeah, and so she said the Hot Pants thing has had its day. But it was time for something new.
The Hot Pants thing had its day.
So the Hot Pants Patrol was gone. And instead, as is written in the Daily News here, the new something last season was a handsome, dark-haired man in sneakers, blue jeans, and a Phillies warm-up jacket. named Neil. So look, his last name is either Bonin or Bonin. And
I know what I hope it is.
I'm gonna say it's Bonin because it fits the story way. Because
he is
way too well. Apparently, this was just like a chisel-jawed 25-year-old dude who they brought in to film Phillies TV commercials. This time, he was the winner of a 30-guy audition, and he was in their commercials promoting with the Philly Fanatic. As this.
Wow.
As
really bad
reads,
news. I love Neil Bonin.
he promoted everything but Philly's underwear night. And girls.
Excuse me?
And girls, he's still single.
Is he dead?
This is in the column. I'm reading.
Okay. I thought maybe he was still single to this day, and I was like, that's a weird nugget you pulled out there, Justin.
I think it's outrageous that that appeared in print, and like that's what this column, which goes on for three more columns, is about. It's
and
about
ladies. He said,
it's literally this article about, hey, look at this hot dude. He wants you to go to Phillies games. And like, that's the article. In 1984, well, they were coming off a season where they won the pennant and went to the World Series. I mean, you know, without the attendance of 1984 in front of me, I can't imagine it was too hard to trick people into going to Phillies games. I just thought it was funny that this guy, Neil Bonin, who, as the article goes on to say, is not a local schoolyard product. He grew up in Reisterstown, Maryland, outside
of
Baltimore.
Not a local schoolyard product. I hope not.
Because they want him to be a local guy so bad, they have to mention, like, hey, guess what? He's not even from here. And you're like, yeah, you just said he was handsome. I know he's not from Philadelphia.
Yeah. Oh, is he from, like... I guess he's from like Royersford then, if he's very handsome. Like all the handsome hunks are out for there.
Would you like to learn more information about Neil Bonin?
Yes, obviously.
He graduated with a political science degree and began job hunting on Capitol Hill. I was really hot into politics, Bonin said.
Oh my God.
I interviewed with a few senators, but no one offered me a job. I had to start working, so I decided to start modeling.
Oh,
you don't you hate it when you're just looking for a job on Capitol Hill and none of the senators are hiring? So you gotta fall back on your extremely handsome face and start a modeling career reluctantly in professional sports.
I do hate
bummer.
I hate that so much.
Yeah, so he was the face of Phillies promotions at this point in history, and yeah, I was completely unaware of this. And this is honestly, it's what's funny is the next year is the year where a bunch of Phillies ads appeared that I think are still on YouTube, that like every once in a while you'll get, you know, someone from Phillies Twitter will be like, I just found these ads from 1985 on YouTube, and they're just very 80s. And one of the articles that I read in relation to this one was talking about those ads the following season. And the one is where like Richie Ashburn's in it, Juan Samuel's in it, a couple other guys are in it. And the article ends with them saying like, yeah, Richie Ashburn kind of just like filmed his spots and peaced out. The shoot was like 5 hours long and he was nowhere to be found after 2 hours.
I love Richie Ashburn so much.
Me like, too.
I was in the flop. I don't need to be here.
I'm not doing this. Goodbye. All right. So as much as 1984 seemed like a lot of balks, like I said, this was something the Phillies had been doing poorly for some time. They were a top five team in balks every year from 1977 to 1983, finishing in first three times. They finished first.
Thank you for saying they finished in first. It is an honor.
They finished the most they had in a season was 23 from 77 to 83. And that was in 1980. Like I said, the year they won the World Series.
It's so good.
The publicized responses to each individual balk of the 1984 team went through the emotional ringer as the anomalies became a trend and the games carried more importance later in the season. And the team and the manager went from clear stages of acceptance to bewilderment, to rage, to conspiracy, to numbness, to all of the balk calls. I mean, they balked on opening day. They balked on the 4th of July.
We will balk them in the trenches. We will balk them in the hills.
Four of them balked twice in one game. Four wow. different pitchers on the Phillies balked twice in one game.
Oh, that's so great.
I wonder how many times that has happened.
That I am not going to try and look up. That sounds like something I will not find.
I was going to say, what a great thing for this particular podcast specifically to know. And we
to
just don't. We just
into.
Don't, folks. We just didn't do it. I don't know what to tell you.
Right. Sorry, folks.
So let's go through these balks one by one. Steve Carlton, April 3rd, opening day. Once criticized for leaving Carlton in games too long, the Phillies yanked him after seven innings this time, which in the mid-80s, you're just kind of like reading now, like, but was that still too early for them? Because they might have thought that was still too
early. That's way too early, yeah.
But that also might have been, I don't know, the modern game was starting to form, so perhaps seven innings was viewed as, like, okay. Just a fun little opening day quirk, that balk by Steve Carlton.
I'm loving this quirk.
Moved Rafael Ramirez of the Braves from first to second, but didn't really factor into too much else. And the Phillies wouldn't balk again until over 2 weeks later, when Al Holland, on April 20th, the score had been 1-1 since the second inning, and here in the 10th inning, every moment mattered. So when reliever Al Holland walked Jose Okunedo, who was 0 for his last 17.
Shouldn't have walked him. I'm just going to go ahead and say it.
0 for his last 17.
Don't walk the guy who's 0 for his last 17.
Like with a hit in that scenario, it's like, okay, he was due, whatever. But a walk is like...
Oh, it's so bad.
Come on, man.
You can't do that.
Guy's getting himself out at this point. Like,
Just let him do it. Let him get himself out.
So he allowed a single after that walk and then balked in Keith Hernandez from third to give the Mets an insurance run and a 3-1 lead, and the game was over. The Phillies struck out three times in their half of the inning and lost. I started my stretch and stopped. Automatic balk. That's called stupid. I anticipated fastball and Bo Diaz, the catcher, dropped down breaking ball. I never lost a game like that before. First time for everything. But I'll be back, Jack. They better get a good night's sleep because I'm coming after their butts next time. Al Holland was always good for a quote like that. But that's what I mean. You know, early on, you know, it's April. He commits a balk. He's like, whatever. I'll get you next time.
I'm going to get your butt. It's not weird.
So 4 days later, Jerry Kuzman, who's a reliever for the Phillies, I believe in like the... If not the last year of his career, the second to last year of his career, he's in his 40s. He allowed a long double that the wet turf caused Gary Maddux to not catch. And a single between Mike Schmidt and Ivan DeJesus on the left side it snuck through. Kuzman expertly picked a runner off first, only for the umpire John Kibler to call a flagrant balk for the
flagrant
inquirer.
Balk? What?
So that meant the batter got to throw, got to shoot three foul shots. And then...
He just got to shoot the pitcher. Sorry. He gets one clear shot at your head.
So this balk allowed in a run as well, which, you know, starts to frustrate people when that happens twice in 4 days.
Yeah.
But guess what? The next day, Steve Carlton's two-out balk on April 25th received almost no coverage in the local media, but fortunately, again, Carlton, who had the most balks on the team, also seemed to have the most balks in meaningless moments. So he kind of saved himself there.
Well, that's because he's a real pro.
And Jerry Kuzman, 4 days later, on April 29th, Jose Acanedo again was on third, 30 feet down the line. This is the one we actually talked about briefly in our last episode and was one of the, I want to say, top three most ridiculous balks of the Philly season. So the base runner's 30 feet down the line. Kuzman is in the middle of his delivery when he finally spots this guy, stops his delivery, starts it, then stops it again. The balk was what... This appeared in Richie Ashburn's column on how much the Phillies were balking in 1984. Kuzman said, "I really don't know what happened. I can't remember doing that before. Just a lapse in concentration, I get." His manager, Paul Owens, said, "Experienced pitchers aren't supposed to do that. As a kid, I can understand panicking."
As a kid?
And umpire Billy Williams, who was quoted in Richie Ashburn's article.
Is that the same as the baseball player Billy Williams?
I don't know.
No way, right? The famous Cub?
I would guess no.
Yeah,
but...
I doubt he became an umpire. That would be, but I mean, what a career move.
Well, he said, "That's a balk you don't even see in high school games, let alone by a major league veteran." So I don't know what the hell was going through Jerry Kuzman's head this year, but yeah, his balk kind of...
I could understand it as a kid. It's so sad.
It's the fifth balk of the Phillies season. It's easily the worst one. The next one wouldn't come until May 4th, which, you know, just a couple of days. They're really only separated by like 3-4 days early on. Charles Hudson commits this one. The Phillies committed two errors in the third amid Hudson allowing two walks and two hits. One of the errors was Hudson dropping a throw to first base. And this all culminated in Hudson balking in Dave Parker to tie the game at 5-5 after the Phillies had started the inning up 5-0.
Oh, brutal. That sucks.
Marty Bystrom came next 3 days later. There were five errors in this game on May 7th. The Phillies apparently had 41 and 26 games. So their defense wasn't solid yet either. So that didn't help, but neither did Bystrom's balk, which allowed the fourth run of an early four-run rally, but was the fifth time the Phillies had allowed a team to score on a balk in this season already.
That's nuts.
That's insane.
That really is remarkable.
Yeah, most teams wouldn't do that this many times in a season, Mike Schmidt said.
Schmidty, always good for a quote.
Solid insight, Mike, and, you know, 100% accurate. Most teams would not do that. I agree. Yeah. Larry Anderson was next just 2 days later. May 9th. Phillies have have a league leading team batting average and a top notch team ERA. And yet they're under 500 in fourth place because of the 42 errors and five run scoring balks they've committed already this year. God. Anderson's little whoopsie on the mound didn't garner any attention outside of the box score because it didn't result in a run like most of Steve Carlton's. So, you know, he's also relatively safe at this point. Now the Phillies wouldn't balk again until May 30th at the end of the month. This one was again Steve Carlton, his third.
Here's my Scott Fransky impression. I just missed it because you moved on to quicker than I thought you would. Hey, Larry, were you out enjoying the local bars before that night? And then Larry goes, I plead the fifth, Scott. And then I laugh and laugh.
I think he would say more like the local bars were enjoying me.
Ah, he would say that. You're right. Yeah. Damn it.
We'd be a good Scott Larry team.
We would be. Maybe the Phillies should hire us to do
this. Definitely replace your beloved broadcasters with two idiots who everyone thinks suck.
I'd take the job.
Oh, I would take the job. Absolutely.
I'd move heaven and earth to take that job.
Steve Carlton on May 30th, he gets away with his third balk of the season in 1984 because, again, without much fanfare, he came only a hair's breadth from it turning into a run, but escaped from the bases loaded jam he was in unscathed. The Phillies did have to sit through an almost 2 hour rain delay in this game in the middle of the ninth inning, which is just the best. I love those rain delays.
Do you?
Yes.
You really love them, huh?
When I'm not attached to the game professionally, where like my next move isn't linked directly to what happens in that game, and I'm watching Safe and Dry from my couch, and a game goes into a 2 hour rain delay in the middle of the ninth inning of a game that's like not close or even really important. Incredible. That's just is that not the height of humor?
It's very funny. I mean, you're right. Like
it's funny to say, to experience. No, it's terrible.
Well, if you care, if you care about the team or have to watch it, like, if it's your job and all of a sudden it's like, okay, Justin, I'm sorry, but now you have to watch like two announcers talk about the rain because you can't miss these next three outs.
Well, the TV network's going to put on Signing Harper. So you'll get to watch that again. Pretty cool. The Phillies had one of those fun rain delays on May 30th. That became more of a story than Steve Carlton's third balk of the season. The next day, June 1st, right? 30 days has September. Okay, so 2 days later, June 1st, Marty Bystrom facing Ryan Sandberg, who was already suspected to be the Phillies' biggest ever trading mistake. Bystrom didn't let Sandberg get to him, but did commit back-to-back walks that moved Bob Dernier, who the Phillies had traded earlier in the offseason, from first to third without Sandberg even seeing a pitch.
Seems like the Phillies have made some whoopsies this year.
And then Sandberg homers twice in that game anyway, taking the National League lead in hits as he does so. The Phillies fall out of first place with the loss and get the news that Tug McGraw has blown out his shoulder and with five miscues increased their league leading error total to 61.
Not great.
It was just well, Literally was out. What I was about to say is literally what Paul Owens, the manager, said at the time. It was just a real bad ball game.
It sounds horrible.
Sometimes that's all you can say. Yeah, Marty Bystrom had two balks in that game. Just bad. So I read one article that said, I think they were talking to either the manager or the general manager of the Phillies at the time, but they were like, basically the only good thing about this team right now is Kevin Gross. And when you're reading that, you know, decades into the future, and you're like, well, guess what? It ain't that great.
Jeez. The only good thing is Kevin Gross is like, oh God, like it would, I can't wait for the either shoe to drop on this one. Like
there's a Kevin Gross episode of this podcast. Of the
yes, Dirt there game. Is.
So you know how things kind of went for him.
How did things go? I think it's Kevin Gross.
I think it's called That's Just Gross. One of our better
titles. That's pretty solid.
So guess who calls the balk on Kevin Gross on June 3rd?
Billy Williams.
Why, it's Joe West, of course.
Oh, okay.
And this allows a run to score the sixth time this season and the Phillies' third balk in four games. By the sixth time, I meant it's the sixth run-scoring balk the Phillies have surrendered in 1984.
That's really bad.
So at this point, they're mad. And that makes sense because Joe West is only doing things like this so that people get mad at him. Like when you talk about it being subjective, you're kind of saying like, OK, the umpire's using his judgment. It's a nice way of saying the umpire's just deciding whether he wants to call a balk or not, whether he wants to impact the game or not. Joe West isn't afraid of that decision. Joe West wants to make that decision. And it's so, so easy to imagine a point in the middle of the season when Joe West is feeling a little unseen and whoops-a-daisy, you did something weird on the mound and now you've balked and everyone's looking at me and talking to me and yelling at me and I get all the attention, tra-la-la-la-la.
Oh, I'm starting to think you have an opinion about Joe West. Not Cowboy Joe.
Occasionally, the universally beloved Joe West, my hot take is, get this, not a great umpire.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's right.
Jeez.
Yeah, I went there. Yeah.
All right, well, oh boy, if you're sure.
It's an acid tongue I wield. Yeah, but Paul Owens agreed with me. He said, you can't even argue
Paul
with those.
Paul Owens agreed with me.
Can you believe it? He did agree with me. He said, you can't even argue with those guys. They just call what they want. I haven't seen this many balks in my life. So he's starting to notice, like, wait a second. We've given up like six runs to balks this year.
I can't wait for the commissioner's inquest into balks.
The umpire said I didn't stop in my stretch, but that's what I've done my whole life. I don't know what the deal is. I've always pitched the same way, and what got me was that two innings later, one of the umpires warned me I was doing it again. Why didn't they warn me before it was called the first time? Kevin Gross asked. That's an actual quote and a really
Kevin,
good point.
Kevin Gross is very, very on point there. That is a good question.
Why am I getting warned after I've done it? Stupid. Okay, number 13, Steve Carlton on June 4th. It all went to shit now. Five balks in four games. People are starting to notice. Both Paul Owens and pitching coach Claude Austin are sick of it. They've been instrumental in us losing games, and where they're calling them from, nobody else sees it. One night a guy behind second base was calling it. Another game a guy from first base is calling it. I don't know how in the hell they got so smart all of a sudden. Play the effing game without all that shit. But they've all got to be in the act. I don't know whether it's a vendetta or what it is, but this was a different crew from the one in Philly. And it was the same story, and it's been going downhill like this since they formed their union, said Paul Owens.
Whoa.
He brought in the union.
Yeah, the umpires union. He doesn't like them.
So, well, here's the deal with the union. Owens had complained that the umpires, you know, they'd pretty much locked themselves up and been unchallengeable for, at this point, almost 15 years prior to 1984.
Okay.
It was the forthcoming postseason during which another labor issue with the MLBUA, the Umpires Association, came to a head. That association had been formed in 1970. They had gone on strike in 1970 for a day and then again in 1979. And then, flash forward a bit here, they also went on strike the first day of the playoffs in 1984 on October 3rd.
That's handy.
So they bring in four Big Ten umpires to work the NLCS between the Cubs and Padres. Ex-Big League umpire Bill Deegan said he was available for the ALCS. Another pair of former umpires sat in the dugouts of this Cubs-Padres series in case a rule interpretation was needed, but they were never called upon. So instead of six, remember, in the playoffs, it would be six big league umpires monitoring the game. This one had, as Michael Wilbon wrote in the Washington Post, two high school teachers, a food salesman, and a jet plane salesman.
Well, in fairness, a jet plane salesman's pretty impressive.
Oh, yeah. And he actually told Wilbon before the game he'd had a good day. He sold two turboprops just before the game started. So
I'm sorry. That's really cool.
Yeah, it is. And what's funny, like the Padres lost, so they weren't afraid to blame the umpires. One of them said, it's a good thing they beat us that bad. The guy, that guy was ridiculous behind the plate. He'll lose it for us or the Cubs in a close game. These guys are nothing but clowns from a college league. It was terrible both ways. Couldn't they scratch up anybody better than this?
Wow.
There are a few classic gaffes, too. One umpire was standing way too far in left field to make a call on a play at third base. The first base ump didn't go far enough into the right field to track a ball on a bases-loaded play. The home plate umpire missed a few pitches. He said after the game, the home plate umpire said, a good game is when you miss seven pitches. So I was not aware of this barometer.
Wow, that seems generous.
that's a lot of pitches, man.
That's a lot of misses, I gotta say.
But the players and coaches all seemed to be saying, like, for the most part, like, they were generally all saying, there's a lot of pressure on these guys. They did the best they could, but, like, through clenched teeth. The Cubs were fine. They won the game. So they were like, whatever. But the ever-helpful commissioner.
Justin?
Yes?
You left there.
Oh, what was I saying?
You said the ever-helpful
Oh, okay. The ever-helpful commissioner's office, occupied by Peter Ueberroth in his first week on the job, indicated that he would not get involved in future talks. And the umpires union rep was like, you should probably, like, should be, though, involved. Because, you know.
We're going to stay on strike. That's.
So that was a fun little disaster to end the season. But we're going to zip back to June 4th. Steve Carlton actually balked twice in another game. So this is, again, some of the one of the four times that a Phillies pitcher balked twice in one game in 1984.
Man.
Claude Osteen, the pitching coach, said at this point, there's been some legitimate balks against us this season, guys who emphatically don't stop. But now it's like the umpires have their hands flying before the play's even finished. They can't wait to call it. I just don't understand why they're suddenly just coming out of nowhere. So the Phillies coaches, managers, players, they were all, according to the Daily News, starting to feel the frustrations of constantly having balks called on them. Carlton's second balk on June 4th came from Eric Gregg. Well, he actually called both of those step balks on lefty from first base.
Step balks!
And the next night, when Eric Gregg moved behind the dish, didn't really have a problem with Cardinals pitcher Joaquin Andujar throwing at Ozzie Virgil's head, resulting in a bench-clearing brawl. The situation made it unlikely that Andujar, who could pitch inside, was trying to hit Virgil. Owens was mad Greg didn't issue a warning, which he felt would have diffused the whole thing, but because of the resulting drama, when Andujar came too far inside on Juan Samuel later in the game, Greg had to eject him. Schmidt got picked off in that game, too, and naturally the Phillies screamed for a balk call. Are you kidding me? And they, of course, did not get one. They call balks and all this other shit. Why the F don't they do the thing they're supposed to do? Paul Owens asked.
Good so selective censorship there.
He's coming apart at this point. People were starting to notice things about the Phillies.
People will say we're insane.
Manager Paul Owens took to the papers after a demoralizing 11-2 loss to the Cubs. We can look as good as anybody in baseball and as bad as anybody in baseball. I can't understand it, he told the Associated Press. Walks, errors, pass balls, wild pitches, double plays. The Phillies had ripped baseball's junk drawer out of the cabinet, and they were waving it around the kitchen, all of the weird, obscure parts landing everywhere. In that 11-2 loss I mentioned, the Phillies ground into four double plays. They were being undone by the sport's dopiest blunders. Owens said they looked like a bunch of dodos out there.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's right.
Nothing worse than that.
Yeah. This was when Richie Ashburn also published his column, which we touched on last time.
Very funny column.
Well, let's just fly through the rest of these balks. Marty Bystrom on June 22nd. The Pirates were hitting .240, the worst team batting average in the majors. But when you give them gifts, they would accept them. Bystrom balked in the second inning. Thankfully, nothing too bad happened. Al Holland balked on the 4th of July. And oh boy, he gets called for a balk by what appears to be opposing batter Dave Concepcion in the 10th inning of a 4-4 tie. The second base ump, whose name is Fred Brocklander, is said to have made the call, but to Holland it appeared that the batter had raised his arms and shouted balk, and the umpires had just agreed with him. So Holland goes nose to nose.
I'd be mad too.
He goes nose to nose with Brocklander, slams the ball into the turf, wasn't ejected, though he did. He was considered for a $100 fine. He did say after the game, "They're one of the worst crews in baseball. I started, ooh, stopped, and stepped off. To them, it's a balk. The umpires didn't call it. Concepcion called it. They can't even call balls and strikes. How can they call that?" So Al Holland, who was like good natured about his first balk, clearly things have changed balk wise. Then you get Steve Carlton on July 17th. He hits his 100 strikeout milestone for the 18th straight year, and with his 308th career win, climbs up on the 11th all-time win list. But he also balked.
It
was his sixth of the year, but because he was one of the lucky ones, his balks rarely resulted in anything too detrimental, except for that pair of them on June 4th. Bill Campbell balks on July 20th. He balked a runner into scoring position in the sixth, and who would eventually come around to score. Kevin Gross, the bright spot, balked twice on July 21st. John Denny was coming off the disables list, so this was as good a time as any for Gross to lose his starting job and head back to the bullpen. But by this point, the balks weren't the story anymore. Charles Hudson on August 4th. Facing Terry Pendleton, he balked a base runner over to second base, and then Pendleton singled in the runner for his 15th hit in 17 major league games in a career of terrorizing Phillies pitchers.
Wow.
Al Holland again, August 10th. Holland was sore from overuse at this point and moved his hands while standing on the rubber. And this time, when they called the balk, he didn't contest. The balk put two runners in scoring position in the 10th. A sack fly brought in one. A homer brought in the other. "It was just another damned screw-up," Holland said. "I don't know how it happened. Ozzie Virgil was putting down the signs slow tonight. Not quickly like we usually work together, but I don't know what happened." It's the second time he's invoked his catcher's name in an explanation for a balk.
Doesn't Al Holland super cool. Loves throwing people under the bus, it looks like.
Doesn't seem super cool. Yeah.
That's kind of messed up, yeah.
Steve Carlton on August 11th. Funny how the balks aren't the story when they happen in the middle of a three-hitter. So he got away with it.
You don't want people
one.
To talk about your balks. Maybe be as good as Steve Carlton. I don't know.
Then Tug McGraw was back by August 21st, but he balked in a run in this game. One of two given up, but the Phillies still win, so
you
it's all
bum.
Good. Charles Hudson on September 6th. He seemed to have Willie McGee picked off in a key moment, but Joe West called it a balk. And
of course.
Again, Charles Hudson on September 6th, a failure to stop call by home plate umpire, giving McGee an extra base after his seventh straight hit. And finally,
stop. That's interesting.
And finally, number 27, Kevin Gross.
Oh, no, Kevin.
September 12th, umpire Ed Montague called a balk on Gross when he threw over to first in the second inning of the second game of a doubleheader. The Phillies did win both games and were now in third place, but in 1984, Phillies pitchers balked 27 times. In 2019,
yikes,
the league leaders were the Angels with 9.
That's better.
So I think 27 just greatly outnumbers the amount of pitchers that balked against the Phillies. I don't have that number in front of me, but like I know that like from June on there were like 12 or 13.
Uh-huh.
So it's pretty safe assumption to think that they outbalked all of their opponents in 1984. And I can't say that there was ever a real explanation given or an investigation conducted. It just seems like it was something that happened. And I think, you know what, they were a balk happy team and they just had Joe West or Joe West types of umpires calling balks on them enough to give them the lead in balks across all of baseball. So I'm willing to chalk this up to just, you know, balking, but also bad luck.
Old-fashioned Joe Westying.
Yeah. But
I think it's funny that the Bucks like caught up with them that much, and they were able to blame the umpires for it, and like nothing, not to say like nothing happened to the umpires, because that's not particularly surprising, but like just nothing happened to anyone involved. Like it would feel like the chance to punish someone at that point would be like just undeniably exciting to almost everyone involved.
And you know what? Like I said, I still don't think they've figured out balks. I think a balk is like everybody's fault. Mm-hmm. At least one part of 1% there's shared blame on a balk. It's an umpire for being too indulgent or too aggressive or not interested enough. It's a pitcher doing anything that could be called a balk, because you know there's so many things that could be. It's just everybody's to blame to a certain degree, and there's never really a definitive. I mean, occasionally, yes, there are definitive balks, but you know, it's easier to find more ambiguous ones, I guess.
Yes, yeah, I would agree.
Even to this day.
Yeah, that's right. Like, I think the only balk that I would 100% agree with was when Brad Lidge balked in the winning run against the Mets. That was a balk. That was he couldn't have done it more clearly. But other than that, yeah, I don't know what you'd say necessarily.
I think we just take that one off the books and we'll call it even.
Yeah, we'll just say no, there were never any other balks.
How many times are the 2021 Phillies going to balk this season, Trev?
Ooh, good question. 17.
30. Oh, okay.
Ooh, wow. Okay. Wow. Oh, my goodness.
Hey, the Phillies they're always undone by some random thing. This year, why not balks?
Why not balks this year?
If you're interested.
And this year, why not balks?
Interested in stupid baseball statistics?
Why not balks?
Try balks. They're right there. Well, folks, as always, thanks for listening to The Dirty Inning. We have a lot of fun putting these episodes together, and hopefully you have a lot of fun listening. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and download all your favorite podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hit and Season with John Stolness, Continued Success with myself and Liz Rocher, and this podcast, The Dirty Inning, with me and Dr. Trevor Strunk. And as always, don't forget to head over to the Patreon at patreon.com/hitandseason, where for $5, you get access to all kinds of content every month, including Absolutely Hammered with myself and Chris Jones, baseball movie reviews with me and Liz Rocher, and whatever other content we decide to put up there. It's well worth your $5. Thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next time on The Dirty Inning.
Bye-bye.